Wake up, America. Time to stump the expert. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, H.J. Heinz Company will send $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, Information, Please is the guest of the great city of Chicago. We are broadcasting from the stage of the immense Civic Opera House. And every person here has bought a war bond as his price of admission. We would like to say that Information, Please is proud to have helped the citizens of Chicago establish a record-breaking new high for the purchase by individuals of war bonds in denominations of $50 to $5,000. Chicago has a right to be proud because this all-time record for a single promotion represents bona fide individual purchases by over 3,500 patriotic Chicagoans who will be happy to know that their total, just for tonight, is $6,818,107. Now, all these millions naturally tend to bewilder us a bit, but we'll try to proceed in our usual carefree manner with our three regulars, John Kieran of the New York Sun, Oscar Levant, and Franklin P. Adams, formerly of Chicago, together with our extra special guest, a contemporary son of Chicago and the man who is largely responsible for that little book that we're so fond of giving away, Mr. Walter Yeust, the editor-in-chief of the Encyclopedia Britannica. I understand from our spies, Mr. Yeust, that you've spent the last 7 days committing the 24 volumes of the Britannica to memory. Is that true?
All but the last two, sir.
Oh, you didn't care about the last
two? No,
three?
I haven't.
Well, you won't know how the plot works out if you don't read the last two.
Well, I can't tell, but...
Well, we'll try you, Mr. Yeust, and see how you make out. Here's a question from Paul R. Morgan of Los Angeles. It comes as a great surprise for us to see that this is a Chicago question. It's about Chicago. What well-known work of fiction has this Chicago locale or setting? Archie Road, A-R-C-H-E-Y. Archie Road. Mr. Adams had his hand up at once.
All the works of Henley Peter Dunne.
Yes. About what famous character, Mr. Adams?
Mr. Dooley.
Mr. Dooley. They're still read, do you think?
They're still read, or should be.
Or should be. One of the two. Quite right. Now, how about this section in Chicago? Pershing Road to Ashland Avenue to 47th Street to Halsted Street. I'm giving you the boundaries of the... Now, what famous literary work had that as its locale, Mr. Levant?
Is it a modern book?
Oh, I won't tell you.
Is that, Studs?
Won't tell you. Are you asking me?
No, well, I'm being coquettish.
Mr. Yeust, what were you going to say?
I hesitate a moment because, I'm going to say the Cliff Dwellers.
No, that would be wrong.
It's the Bunner, yes.
And I think you would be wrong, too, Mr.
Levant. What are the boundaries again?
Pershing Road to Ashland Avenue to 47th Street to Halsted Street. Now, but everybody in this auditorium knows the book that...
You take a bus? I don't know those streets.
I don't know what you take now to get there. Mr. Adams, do you want to guess? We've got one wrong so far.
I don't know what Pershing Road is.
Well, it's the... I've bounded, roughly, the stockyards. And that was seen...
The Jungle.
Yes, The Jungle. Captain Sinclair's famous book about the meatpackers of many years ago. Well, that's one wrong, gentlemen. We have to get the next one right. What well-known book or play has the Criminal Courts building as its locale, Mr. Hughes?
Front Page, isn't it?
The Front Page, yes. By whom, Mr. Hughes?
Ben Hecht.
Ben Hecht.
Charlie MacArthur.
And Charlie MacArthur. Do you think... I don't know whether that was good or bad publicity for Chicago, Mr. Hughes. What would you think?
Very excellent publicity.
Very good. Try this one. That gives us 2 out of 3. Here's one from John D. Mollison of Jackson Heights, New York. What is being described in each of the pairs of words that you're going to hear sung. They're going to be three sets, three bits of singing, and each, there are going to be two pairs of words in each bit of singing, and you have to tell us what's being described. Let's have the first.
From Lachman to Spiegel, from Noting to Plasman, wherever the game is played.
Mr. LeVant had both hands up right from the very beginning.
That's the Chicago Bears. Don't throw with a ton of knackers to my mammy done call me.
Yes. And the Chicago, that's the famous...
Yeah, Luckman and Siegel were at Columbia together, too, which was not in Chicago. It's in New York.
Yes, so those are two famous forward-pass combinations. That's exactly right. That's right, Kieran, isn't it?
That's perfectly correct.
I mean, if you remember your sport.
That's a touchdown.
All right, let's try the second.
From London to Tunis, from Fatia to London, wherever the bombers fly.
Now, what's being described there very lyrically, Mr. Kieran?
That's a two-way bombing.
Shuttle.
Yes. Who's been doing it lately, Mr.
Well, the RAF's been doing it, going from London and dropping bombs on Germany or Spezia, choice of one, and then going on landing in North Africa, refueling and hitting the other one on the way back.
Yes, seems like a very good system. But now we're going to have one more set of pairs of words. Let's have it.
From Anu to Balti, from Atlas to Indes, wherever the language is known.
Well, Mr. Youth, your life depends on your answer.
I can't help but answer that one. Encyclopedia Britannica.
What volume?
Well, A to...
Now, this is Anu to Baltic.
Anu to Baltic, that's the third.
That's the first.
A to Anu, Anu to Baltic is the second.
Anu, yes.
Well, what was the other?
Atlas to Indes.
Oh, well, that's the last.
You did get to the last one, Father.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I know Vase to Zygo, too. That's the 23rd.
What one?
Vase to Zygo.
Say, that's the one I want to read. Well, we got 3 out of 3 on that. Do you really spend your time reading the Encyclopedia Britannica in the evening, Mr. Yu?
Not if I can help it, sir.
I always wanted to know what an encyclopedia editor did in his spare time, if any.
Well, there are a number of things one does.
Gin Rummy, probably.
Probably Gin, but from Gin to Rummy. How about this one? From Marie E. Rosner of Buffalo, New York. Where in poetry or song do you find these phrases? They sound somewhat alike. They're pairs of words. The first is up and down. Up and down. I'm not giving you much of a hint on this, Mr. LeVant.
Get the flying trapeze.
Now, I don't think you'd find that pair of words in the flying trapeze. Where would you find it? You'd find it in Kipling's Boots. Boots, moving up and down again, there's no discharge in the war. That's a very tough one. How about big and strong? Big and strong, Mr. LeVant.
Gee, I know it. Give me another half hour. Wait, big and strong.
I'll say it again.
Oh, that farmer in the dell.
How does it go?
My baby sings it. He drinks his milk
and
grows big and strong.
We have no time to bring your baby here.
The farmer in the dell, the farmer in the dell, hi, old Mario. The farmer in the dell, he grows big and strong, grows big and strong, hi, old Mario.
I think that's right. Is that right, Mr. Allen?
That's one of the
records. Well, also in The Man I Love, Oscar.
Oh, yeah. He'll come along, The Man I Love, big and strong.
But I like your first one much better.
Yeah.
Although your baby deserves the credit, not you. How about simple and heartfelt? Simple and heartfelt. Mr. Adams, where did you find that phrase?
Come read to me some poem, some simple and heartfelt lay.
That's very correct. And who wrote it?
H.W. Longfellow again.
H.W. Longfellow in the poem called The Day Is Done. Don't seem to be able to hand out any of those encyclopedias, Mr. Eustace.
That disappoints me, sir.
Well, you can help us out.
Oh, I'll do my best.
All right, try this one from Mrs. F.P. Winslow of Rockland, Maine. I'm going to give you three sets of three characters each. Which of the three characters, which one, is not found in the same book as the other two? Here's the first trio of characters. Christopher Sly, the Widow Wadman, Dr. Slop. Two of those are found in one book. The third is not. Name the one which is not found, Mr. Kieran.
Well, if nobody else wants it, I'll say Christopher Sly doesn't belong in there.
That would be quite right. Why did you say that?
Well, because Christopher Sly is in a Shakespearean work.
That's quite right.
He is the The drunken fellow in the opening part of The Taming of the Shrew. He gets lost in the rest of the play, by the way.
Good. But not lost enough for you to be unable to find him, apparently, Mr. Kieran.
I know the two others are not with him.
That's right. That's good thinking. That's good thinking. The Widow Wadman and Dr. Slop are two famous characters in what other book? Well, Mr. Youth?
Peregrine Pickle, or one of those English writers.
Same period. It's just from Shandy by Lawrence Stern. That's right. Now, try this one. Now, no guesses this time. Mr. Kieran just picked that out by the skin of his teeth. How about this? Tom Canty, that's C-A-N-T-Y, Sir Miles Hendon, and Sir Patrick Spens. One of those doesn't belong with the other two, Mr. Adams.
Sir Patrick Spens.
That's quite right. Who is Sir Patrick Spens, Mr. Adams?
Well, the others are in Mark Twain.
Yes, what book? You're avoiding...
The Pauper.
Yes, you're still evading my question. A typical charm, Adam. Who is Sir Patrick Spens?
Oh, he was in The Ballad of...
Yes, that's the fellow, sure. Famous ballad. Famous English ballad of Sir Patrick Spens. Here are three more characters. One of them doesn't belong with the other two. Joyce Lanyon, Carol Kennicott, Leora Tozer.
Carol Kennicott made me take a Sinclair Lewis. Am I crazy?
Do you say that she doesn't belong... Yes, but that's not the answer to the question.
Carol Kennicott is by Sinclair Lewis and Main Street or Babbitt, one of the two.
She's the one that doesn't belong with the other two.
Well, I never heard of the other two, and I heard of Carol Kennicott, so you make the decision.
By gosh, he's right. I don't know how he picks these things up, but he's quite right. Carol Kennicott is the heroine of Main Street, as Mr. Levant said, and the other two ladies are the two wives, respectively, one after the other. I had to clean that up quick. From Arrowsmith.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Alan Hayes was in that, you remember?
No. But that gives us three out of three and sends us on to a question from Mrs. I. N. Entine of Long Beach, New York. This is a two-part question, gentlemen, and we may get rather a long answer on the two parts. We have to get both parts. Explain scientifically, in a way that I won't understand, why blowing on soup helps to cool it. Have you ever blown on soup, Mr. Kieran?
Yes.
All right. Now, tell us why that helps to cool soup.
All right, because it aids the evaporation of the... and changes the atmosphere over the top of the soup, which carries off the superfluous heat, or rather the higher degree of heat that is in the soup than in the surrounding atmosphere.
Adams, is that right?
That's right. Also works with coffee.
Good team. That's quite right. Mr. Kieran, very good. 100% on that. That's clear even to me. How about dunking a donut in coffee? Now, if you ever did dunk a donut, the liquid, you know, travels up the donut past the coffee level in the cup. Fascinating little thing. Mr. Youth, why does that happen?
Isn't that called osmosis? It's the capillary attraction that draws the...
That's quite right. Now, all you have to do is to explain to me what capillary attraction is, Mr. Youth.
Well, I'm sorry. I can't tell. I suppose it works like a sponge. Sponge draws in the water, and I suppose the capillaries do the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
That's only
with
good coffee, though.
Don't you know that you'll find this, Mr. Youth, in Cap to Dunk, in your own encyclopedia, if you look it up?
I'm sure I would.
Now,
I would suggest you let me have a set here on my knee. I'll answer.
Mr. Kieran, what is capillary attraction? Mr. Youth's answer is quite
well. I don't know. It's evident in rather small orifices. You can't get much capillary attraction by sinking something as big as a chimney in a.
Who is talking of
chimney? Canal. But in small openings and small vertical.
The
air pressure will come up. However, that's not osmosis. That's
you're getting me more confused than ever. Suppose I put it this way. You know, coffee is made of molecules. Is that right, Mr. Adams? Now, the molecules of the coffee are more...
Especially nowadays.
Let me get back to my molecules for a minute. These molecules are more strongly attracted to the solid, which in this case is the donut, than they are to each other. Scandalous as that may seem. And therefore, they go up past the level of the coffee cup. And if there's anybody listening to me who does not understand what I have just explained, kindly do not write in and ask for an explanation. That gives us two out of two. And here is our reporter for Heinz 57 Varieties, Ben Grauer, who has dug up an interesting sidelight on rationing.
It may not be any comfort to you, but anyway, it's interesting to know that rationing is nothing new. The Chinese, wise people that they are, thought of the idea several thousand years ago. Their system was fairly simple. They gave each citizen a length of string. Every time that provisions were distributed, a small piece of string was cut off. And I suppose as the string grew shorter, a Chinese woman must have felt the same panicky feeling that comes to a housewife today when she adds up her ration points and tries to make them stretch over the long list of foods that her family wants. Well, Heinz 57 varieties have a magic way of making rationed foods go farther and taste better, too, because they season while they stretch. And quite a few of Heinz 57 are unrationed, you know. Those old-fashioned Heinz pickles, for instance, they don't take a single ration point. Neither does Heinz mustard or horseradish, Worcestershire, or the famous Heinz 57 sauce, which works such wonders in adding flavor to meat-stretching dishes. Heinz full-bodied vintage vinegars are on the non-rationed list, too, and so are Heinz pure fruit jellies and Heinz peanut butter, good old standbys for sandwich makers. You see, there are bright spots in this ration picture, and quite a few of them belong to Heinz 57 varieties.
Thank you, Mr. Brower. Let's go on with this question from Peter Cooper of New York City. It's a very simple question. Where is each of the following places located, and what is odd about them? And let's get three out of three. East St. Louis. Where is it located, and what's peculiar about it? East St. Louis, Mr. Adams.
East St. Louis is in Illinois.
Yes, where should it be, apparently?
It should be in Illinois, but it's supposed to be in Missouri is the answer.
Yes. What about it? That's a clear case of confusion. St. Louis is in Illinois. East St. Louis is in Illinois. St. Louis is in Missouri, which makes it very difficult to understand if you happen to live in either one of the two places.
Across the Mississippi.
Across the Mississippi. Were you going to tell us anything else, Mr. Levant, about...
I've forgotten what the question was. Go on, please.
All right, here we go. I'll try you on East Chicago.
Chicago is in Indiana.
Indiana.
Should be in Chicago, I guess, but it's Indiana, can't explain why.
Well, maybe it's just moving east. How about West New York? Where's that, Mr. Curran?
New Jersey.
New Jersey, yes.
It's all right if it stays there.
Oh, you'll hear from West New York in the morning. Try this one for Mr. W.J. Tucker, Jr. of Atlanta, Georgia. And this, too, I think, is a 3 out of 3 question. Name the fictional character who, when he or she was frightened, did the following things. This one rode out of town when he was frightened. Was frightened and rode out of town.
Charlie Chaplin.
And what?
I don't know if he was frightened, but he rode.
Maybe so, but he's not a fictional character.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Kieran.
Well, Skipper Ireson rode out of town on a rail, didn't he? Got quite a pelting on his way.
Well, he was ridden out of town.
Well, he had to ride.
True. It's a delicate distinction, Mr.
Well, I'll guess it might be those are wrong. John Gilpin.
No, he didn't ride out of town as a result of a fright. The answer is Ichabod Crane in Irving's Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I guess we all remember that now from high school reading. How about this one? Who, when he was frightened, pretended to be dead? He was frightened and pretended to be dead.
That's me right now.
Not a chance. Mr. Adams?
Tom Sawyer.
No.
Huckleberry Finn.
No. Though it's nice to hear you bring him up, Mr.
Well, it was a famous character who pretended he was dead and then got up and claimed later he fought a long hour by the Shrewsbury clock. Is that my friend, Sir John Falstaff?
Yes, it is. And what nice people you go around with. Yes, that's Falstaff, and you'll find that... Henry the Fourth, what part?
Part two.
Isn't it part one?
No, I think that's part two. I may be wrong.
I wish you had his encyclopedia here.
I might have.
How about the fictional character who, when frightened, jumped out of a window? Jumped out of a window. Mr. Yu.
Tom Sawyer did that, didn't he?
Don't remember that. In what part of the book?
He took the window pane with him. He went so fast.
That does come back to me. I don't know whether it was...
He leaped out the window and took the pane with him.
Was it the result of a fright?
The frame with him.
I was thinking of Goldilocks. Wasn't she scared and... by the three bears and jump.
That was the one story hut she was in. It couldn't be much of a jump. But Douglas Fairbanks and all his pictures used to jump.
Any one of those, yeah. But I don't think we got 3 out of 3 on that. That's then $57 in war bonds and stamps, Mrs. Tucker.
And a set of Mr. Youth's famous favorite reading. How about this one from Roger Allen Crowley? Just $57 will do, thanks. Roger Allen Crowley of College Point, Long Island. This again, gentlemen, is a musical question. Let's get 2 out of 3. Or rather, this is a single question. We have to get 1 out of 1. What happening is suggested by these songs? They're going to be played one after the other. Go ahead. Two hands, Mr. Kieran.
Well, that's our bond tour.
Well, tell us all about it, Mr. Kieran. What are the 3 songs that were being played?
Well, I know the 2nd and 3rd, and I...
You don't know the
3rd? Chicago,
yes,
Chicago, that toddling town.
Chicago, San Francisco, and any bond today.
That's right. Yes, our next stop on our bond tour will be San Francisco 2 weeks from now, and the 3 songs describe where we're starting from, Chicago, and where we're going to end up. Hello, Frisco, hello, and any bonds today. That's quite right. The courtesy of the H.J. Hines Company permits us to use their commercial time now in which to say just a word or two about a subject that hits us where all of us live, in our pocketbooks. Remember, every unnecessary purchase we make, every dollar or dime that we waste, makes it harder to control prices. Runaway prices mean that whatever we make and have is worth less. So remember, protect your own money by taking that extra dollar or dime and putting it into the world's best investment, war bonds and stamps. Now, Philip B. Burgess of Grafton, Massachusetts, keeping in mind, no doubt, the fact that we're going to be in Chicago this week, sends this one in. Chicago is known as... Mr. Adams and Mr. Youse would tell us of the Windy City. Can you quote a line of poetry which mentions first a zephyr, then a breeze, and then a whirlwind?
You're a big bag of wind.
Is that a...
Is it poetry if you say you're a big bag of wines?
Yeah. Not only poetry, but sometimes true. Mr. Kieran?
Zephyr with aurora playing.
What?
Milton.
That's a beautiful line. Let me have that again.
L'Allegro.
Don't remember it, Mr. Kieran. Sure, it's right.
Oh,
Mr.
Yeah.
Does that come back to you?
Isn't Zephyr a cross between a Lincoln and a Ford?
That sounds like a line of poetry, too. Zephyr is a cross between a Lincoln and a Ford. You know, it really does begin to stand.
Yeah.
Or here's one right up your alley, Mr. Levant. I dream of Jeannie with a light brown hair, born like a zephyr on the summer air. Now, how about breeze? A line of poetry with the word breeze in it. Mr. Adams.
Breeze, there a man with soul.
Adams, all I can say is this is the best-natured audience that you've ever played to. I'll take it in lieu of better. Any of you fellows got something, Mr. Levant?
Not poetry again. It's a breeze, my lord. It was in the Earl of Chicago Club.
That's all right. Okay. Or every little breeze seems to whisper for
Louise.
Louise, yes. Or from America, which some of us might remember, I should think. What lines are there in which the word breeze appears? Let music swell the breeze and ring from all the trees. How about whirlwind? A line of poetry with the word, Mr. Kieran.
Well, there is the voice out of the whirlwind in the book of Job.
Yes.
In the Bible.
That's a very good one. And also from the Bible, they have sown the wind,
reaped the whirlwind.
And reaped the whirlwind, yes. Any one of those would be a very good one. Try this from Emily Zimmerman of South Orange, New Jersey. Who went away under this name, which I'll give you, to reappear under another more famous one at a later time? Ought to get 3 out of 3 on this, too. Benjamin Thompson went away under the name of Benjamin Thompson and reappeared under other circumstances under a more famous name. Who was it?
Where did he come from?
Well, he came from England originally, spent a good deal of his time here when we were still a colonial nation. And, Mr. Youth, you know who it is? It's a very famous personage. He later on was made
a count, Count Rumford. He's a famous physicist. He's made a count of the Holy Roman Empire in 1791. Well, that's one wrong. Now, who went away under the name of Sir Ruthven Murgatroyd and reappeared under another more famous name? Mr. Adams.
Well, it was somebody in Ruddigore.
Yes, it was. What was the name under which he reappeared in Ruddigore, Mr. Adams?
Robin Oakapple.
That's exactly right. Robin Oakapple. Very good. How about Peter Jablonowski? Mr. Levant.
He was a pitcher with Washington when he changed his name. Appleton.
Yes.
He's in the Navy now, I think.
He's in the Navy.
Service.
What rating?
Oh, I don't know. He's a naval seaman, anyway.
Good for him, yes. He returned to the majors at Appleton and pitched for the White Sox and Senators. Now, he had to get 3 out of 3 on that. That sent $57 in war bonds and stamps to Miss Zimmerman. Thank you very much. And a set of the Britannica. It's a good thing you don't have to ring up the Britannica. How about this one from W.N. Scriven of Washington, D.C.? Name a presidential campaign in which both candidates came from Ohio. Mr. Levant.
1920, Cox and Harding.
That's exactly right, Mr. Levant.
They both won.
How about this one? Both candidates came from Illinois. Both candidates came from Illinois.
Mr. Hust. Lincoln and Douglas.
Lincoln and Douglas, Mr. Hust, exactly right. And how about both candidates came from New York? Mr. Levant.
Roosevelt and Wilkie, he lived there in the last election.
In the same election.
What?
Wilkie didn't come from New York.
He's there now. Call
him
up.
He's there now, part of the time. When he isn't in China.
Tilden, that one? No.
Now you're wild. Now you're pitching him wild. How about it? One wrong on that. It's Theodore Roosevelt and...
Fairbanks.
No, Alton B. Parker. Both came from the Empire State. That gives us one wrong, but two right on that. I think we'll have time for this one from Grace C. Howes of Boston, Massachusetts. Who doesn't have a good time in each of these places? Who doesn't have a good time in each of these places? Get 2 out of 3. The Happy Valley. The Happy Valley. Who doesn't have a good time in the Happy Valley?
Is that by Max Beerbohm?
No. It's the Happy Hypocrite that just...
Oh, yeah. He was happy, I know.
Well, the residents of the Ruhr Valley, now called the Happy Valley, ironically, who are being bombed and not having a very good time. Who didn't have a good time in Paradise? Paradise?
That's a nightclub, isn't it?
Well, there was. It's used in another connection.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Lucifer didn't. He got thrown out.
Yeah, quite right, Mr. Kieran. Satan and the other fallen angels, as Milton tells us, in his Paradise Lost. And who doesn't have a good time, or didn't, in Pleasure Island? Not Treasure Island, but Pleasure Island. Well, it's Pinocchio. Remember the picture, Mr. Levant?
Yes, I do.
He had a tough time for Pinocchio. Yeah. That sent $57 in war bonds and stamps. Good work. And a set of the Britannica to Miss Howes of Boston, Massachusetts. Thank you, Mr. Hughes. And tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $171 in war bonds and stamps and 3 sets of Mr. Hughes' favorite reading, The Encyclopedia Britannica. We regretfully leave Chicago tonight and continue westward. Next week, we'll broadcast from Hollywood with the good old trio of Adams, Kieran, and Levant, plus, as our guest, the eminent Hollywood maestro and all-around linguist, Mr. Gregory Rathoff. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. Now, H.J. Hines Company, whose 57 varieties label is your guide to full value in tasty foods, joins with us at Information Please in wishing you good health and good evening. Be with us next Monday night.
This program came to you from Chicago. This is the National Broadcasting Company.